Brainwaves, hear the world differently, bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR, 8:55 a.m, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. My name's Mark and today I'm chatting with Paul Guyton about his work, his creative process and the realities of living and writing with mental health challenges. Welcome to the show, Paul. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Would you like to share a bit about yourself before we get started?
Well, I grew up in country New South Wales on a sheep farm. It was quite isolated. I liked the character in my book, I'm an Only Child. I went to primary school there. And then when I was about 12, going into high school, I boarded at a place called Red Bend Catholic College, which is in Forbes, and went to uni after that and spent 3 years in Sydney and came down to Melbourne in 1997. That's just a bit of my sort of movements in history.
When did you first start writing and what drew you to writing?
Well, I suppose I've really written since I knew how to string a few sentences together, but sort of there are a few things that sort of drove the compulsion, I suppose it is, to write a bit more. One was an interest in and study of acting. Another was learning more about history, world history and stuff. I've always been very interested in that. Reading a few good books and more as the years progressed. And also my father wrote short stories.
Over time, has writing become a part of your therapeutic practice or well-being routine when it comes to,
Not in a sort of organised way. I suppose I feel better after I have written. I enjoy doing the writing. At the same time, you can go through bits of emotions with your characters and with the scenes, with what's happening. But generally, with this book and the last one at least, you sort of come out of it feeling good.
You work with a writing mentor. Would you like to share a bit about who they are and how that relationship works?
Yeah, I've got through NDIS, I've got a writing mentor called Sean Smith, who's commonly known as Smitty. And we work together on the writing, and he copy edits it and suggests what's working, what's not. I often read passages aloud. Through NDIS, I was also able to get a manuscript assessment for Connor Parra, which is the name of my latest book. And there was a very positive report. There are a few things, because there always are, but overall it was a nice little ego boost.
You mentioned the book that you're working on. What can you tell us about the book so far?
Well, I sort of started it, I think it was about March of 2023, so it's coming up to 3 years I've been working on it. I might be three or four years. And it begins with a fire. It's in a small town in the country. Begins with a fire at the local pub. And I'll sort of go through this in the reading, but there's children trapped inside. And we're left on a bit of a cliffhanger at the start of that first part of that first chapter. And then it goes back 9 months and basically tells the story of the characters and how the fire evolves and what happens and how it affects different people. And
I think you mentioned how long you've been developing this manuscript for. Yeah. It's been about three to four years?
Since March 2023. So 23 to 24, 24 25. Yeah, 3 years I think it is.
What inspired you to tell this story?
Well, partially real life, because during my lifetime there was a fire at the pub in my hometown. Although it was due to an electrical fault, it sort of formed a fairly concrete structure in my mind before I wrote a word. Now, yeah, it just sort of came to me and. Yeah.
Are there any themes around mental health woven into the narrative?
Well, there are a few, yeah. The main character goes through, when he's sort of alone and hasn't got any friends at one point, he goes through a sort of psychosis type experience, and that sort of recurs a bit when he is implicated in the fight.
In general, when it does come to media and literature, how do you feel about mental health struggles, the way that they're usually portrayed?
I think it's pretty poor. Basically. And it's not just the movies, it's the media too. If there's some sort of violent attack, it always comes back to this person had a mental illness. And to the uninformed, that seems, if you have a mental illness, it's only a matter of time before you explode and either you're dead or a whole heap of other people are dead. It's just sensationalist bullshit. If I may use that word.
In your opinion, are there any books or portrayals in film or TV that actually get it right, or do you feel that's something that still needs to be sort of worked on?
There are some that are better than others. I have heard of a book that is pretty good at it, but I can't think of the name of it at the moment. I think it's sort of a science fiction book. And it's revolves around a woman who has a mental illness, and she somehow travels forward in time where they've solved the problem of people developing mental illnesses, suffering the worst symptoms, all that type of thing. Yeah.
And would you like to give us a reading before we go to break?
I'll read the first chapter. But I'll read it in two parts because they're sort of divided by time. So this is chapter one of Connor Parrott. The old pub was on fire and children were missing. The evening began cloudless in Connor Parrott, but hellish black smoke now billowed up from the middle of town, fouling the sky and erasing early stars and the mushroom. Evacuated to the street, the patrons of the Bushman's Hotel, wearing tennis whites, stared in disbelief. Tom and Audrey Carruthers were the only couple not wearing whites because they had come straight from Mass, even though the occasion had been Tom's life membership to the Tonopara Tennis Club. They couldn't find their son Archie. Audrey grabbed Tom's arm and turned her head into his shoulder. It was little comfort as she told herself, maybe it was more smoke than flames. The pub was engulfed. We've got to go in there, Tom. Oh, the fire is not what they're doing. They'll get it. But Tom's words quivered. Audrey felt sick at the unfamiliar sound. It was not her husband's voice. And if they can't, they will, Archie, Archie, she screamed. Boom! The pub's top level windows blasted out, blanketing onlookers in glass and ash. The crowd backed off screaming. Audrey could feel the reverb in her stomach, like giving birth to death. She vomited hard on the road. A grey figure staggered from the smoke, indistinguishable in colour, and fell in the street. The only thing that identified them was the dirty orange CFA helmet now resting against Tom's ankle. The fiery lifted his head. There's two children in there. Well, bloody well get them out, Tom demanded. On his knees, the fiery shook his head despairingly. It's too dangerous to get them out. George Mullins, drunk and frantic, pushed his way forward.
I don't know where Mick is. I think my Mick's in there.
We'll get them out, George, Tom said.
My Mick,
he repeated, howling. Another explosion blast in time with a child's scream.
It's too late. It's too late,
George continued. Stop it, Audrey yelled. Tom reacted, dashing forward, the debilitated fiery trying desperately to grab hold of his trouser leg from his position on the ground as Tom raced past. But to no avail. The crowd, their whites now spoilt all shades of soot and horror, watched Tom disappear into the deep smoke.
So you're also part of a video and arts collective called Mixed Nuts Media. Can you tell us who they are and what that group does?
It's a group of people with a lived experience who make little films. Our chairperson is a visual artist. Various people bring various skill sets to the organisation. I've written a few scripts for them. We haven't done a lot of work. We did a bit more than usual last year. Filmed two or three things. What else? Sort of empowering and achieving something makes you feel good when you try to do something and you got it done and you're happy with it. It's a feeling that's hard to beat.
Could you share one of the projects that you have been able to complete recently?
I and the chairperson. I'd often go over to her place and we'd have chats. And from that, we sort of evolved this idea of the feminist and the farm boy. And we did a short sort of a bit like bit of a bit in the in the in the in the in the sort of idea of something like the movie show or at the movies or those old film review shows. Although we reviewed shows about mental illness. And Sue was the feminist and I was the farm boy. And we had Sue had someone with a worker, and he had to chew gum because he was laughing too much and he didn't want to disturb the sound or drown out our lines and stuff like that. So we're yet to edit that. A little bit of work's been done on it, but hopefully once we get properly into the new year, we can get stuck into that, the editing and stuff.
You have a background in acting as well, I believe. How has that influenced your writing or other creative projects you take part in?
Well, it sort of introduced me to a lot of playwrights and sort of a part of the other thing was I think it was in first year we didn't do much practical work. It was mainly theory and a lot of sort of classes, lectures, notes, that sort of thing, not a lot of acting as such. And so I sort of started writing stuff. Like I wrote a short play called The Toilet. Myself and a friend conceived that idea and I wrote it out. I wrote sketches and probably in terms of other playwrights, that sort of inspired me. My first real more literary influence was Harold Pinter, The Caretaker, The Homecoming, No Man's Land, Betrayal, The Birthday Party. He was a big, if you're not aware of him, he was a big wheel in the 60s.
You've mentioned that your NDIS funding helps cover your writing mentor. How was that arranged? Was it challenging to get the NDIA on board?
Yeah, it has to do with Mixed Nuts, actually.
Oh, okay.
We filmed an interview with Andrea McGrath, who was the head of disability support for the Moonee Valley Council. And we'd previously done a film to that called The COVID Chronicles, which was people's disabilities experience of the COVID lockdowns. And the interview after that, Sue worked with Andrea in that film, and we interviewed her and the technical consultant, Peter Lane, and her husband is Smitty, or her partner,
it was and Smitty, that's your writing mentor, isn't
that's
it?
That's my writing mentor. So I met that through that connection. That's how I first met Smitty. We've worked together now for, I think it's nearly 5 years.
Yeah, so many people have seen NDIS services reduced or removed over the past few years. How do you feel about the impact that's had on people who might really benefit from creative services that are also therapeutic?
Well, I generally think it's a bad policy, bad idea. Although there are, I'm not saying, I mean, it's sort of, there are some people who try to get the pension or NDIS when they're not really legitimate. Fair enough, they're legitimate, and I think they shouldn't cut back on people who genuinely need stuff. And I think our artistic expression can be a great form of therapy. And part of the reason I got the funding for some of my writing work, including having Smitty as my mentor, is that it improved the quality of my life. I found the writing improved the quality of my life, and it was productive, and it satisfied something within me. And if artistic expression can, and I think it often does, help someone with whatever disability they've got, then I recommend it.
And how do you personally balance looking after your mental health while staying engaged with creative work like writing and what you do with Mixed Nuts Media?
Well, there are times when it's easier than others, although for the most part in the last 3 years I've been well. I suppose I give myself. I get out and go out and catch up with friends, do the social sort of things. It's not related to NDIS or any mental health service, but I'm in a group called Writers Creative Social, which meets once a month, and that's creatives and writers, and you have the option when you go to read some of your writing to the group. And, it's a great evening.
When you hit writer's block, how do you work through that?
I haven't had writer's block for a good while. I've had periods where I've taken a break from it a bit, but I haven't sort of, I think, it's been a fair while since I've really sat at the computer and could get nothing or only a few lines or,
Are there any authors who particularly inspire your work?
Yeah, probably Henry Miller and Dostoevsky. Kerouac himself's pretty good. I could list off a whole heap of names. If it is one you might not have heard of, there's an English writer, or was an English writer, called Tom Sharp, who writes very, very funny, fast, like comedies. And, and I suppose I'd have to throw Harold Pinter in there too. That's just a few.
What words of encouragement would you offer to anyone living with mental health challenges who feel those struggles are a barrier to getting into the arts?
Well, the great thing about writing in particular is, as long as you've got a pen and a paper, you can do it, you know, and sort of my life has improved since I've sort of been more involved with my writing and got assistance with my writing. And I often read passages at Mixed Nuts meetings, and I've had comments that my writing will have improved from a fortnight ago or a month ago, except when I did the previous reading. So, you sort of, it's meaningful and it's productive and it satisfies the self and satisfies your sense of well-being.
Would you like to give us another reading, Paul?
Yeah. So this is 9 months earlier. Archie sat with his back resting against Phantom's grave. It was not comfortable for the skinny child. The rock pile dug into his spine, and the colourless sun above was as alone in the sky as Archie was on the earth below. He was talking to the dead dog quietly, telling him about it was just Phantom's old body under the rocks now, and how he, Archie, had been brave enough to lay the final stone and not to worry because other animals wouldn't be able to dig him up, and maybe Phantom should go for a run round the paddocks, head up to the wool shed or the silos. You've got a bit different body now, Phantom. The only child's tears were persistent as he continued to talk to his friend. But when he had to say the animal's name, when he had to say Phantom, his voice split in the air. He didn't want to avoid the name. He wanted to be able to say Phantom, but it disintegrated his guts to speak the name out loud. It made his skull tighten, and he felt he might bite his own arm down to the bones of the wrist, just so all of this would stop. Stop, stop, he heard the shot again. Archie wondered if Phantom understood what had happened. They knew Phantom was slowing, but he could still do his job around the sheep, and he stayed close to Archie when there was no work. Archie even snuck him in at night to sleep on his bed. That's when Archie loved with being Phantom the most. But in the last year, Phantom's back legs started in different directions to his front legs, and the off-white film of decline in the dog's eye got thicker until he relied on scent. Then Phantom began to yelp for no apparent reason other than the agony of age. And Archie's father, Tom, decided it was time he removed the Beretta from the tall cabinet. Arch, you know as well as me there are things on a farm that aren't pleasant or easy to do. They have to be done regardless. One day I'm not going to be here and you might have to do this, Tom said. I don't want to. It's a harsh lesson, but an important one. Let go of my sleeve. With a bullet in the chamber, Tom closed the breech. A click and then a sharp snap. It'll be quick. He won't hear the shot. Please no, Dad. Please no. Tom tried to be sensitive. Archie's known Phantom his entire life, Audrey said, looking at Archie and reassuring her son that his father was doing the right thing. Archie grabbed at his father's sleeve. Please no, Dad, please no. Tom snatched his arm free, took hold of the rifle and started outside towards the kennel. The other two dogs seemed to know what was about to happen, barking the moment Tom called Phantom's name. Don't talk to me, please, Dad. Phantom barely raised his head. He could barely keep food down there. The old dog grumbled as Tom got closer to unsnip the kennel lock, but then his nostrils flared and his eyes sought Archie. Archie froze. For a moment, Archie wanted his father to shoot him in the head instead, right there. He wanted to be dead before then. He didn't even care if his mum saw his brains in the kennel dirt. No! Calm down, Arch. It's going to be okay. Tom motioned for his son to go and say goodbye. It's okay, mate. It's got to be done. Archie went and sat by Fanny. The old dog rested his head in the child's lap. They looked at each other while Archie stroked the dog's nose, brow and nose. He leaned down and kissed Fanny tenderly on the top of the head, streaming tears, wetting black fur. The groan the animal emitted sunk Archie's head.
Don't shoot him, Dad. Don't shoot Phantom.
He's in pain, mate. Too much pain. You don't want him in pain. None of us want Phantom in pain. Tom forced Archie to stand, pulling him up carefully, but without any doubt that this was the end, making the child relinquish contact with the dog. Phantom's head slumped back down on the blanket. Audrey, can you help me? Audrey came in gently and put a firm arm around Archie. She moved him quickly, as far from the kennel as possible, and turned him away so that the sun was facing the paddocks, where all Archie could see was sheep. 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 Fucking sheep. Archie wanted to kill all those sheep at that moment. He wanted to kill them with them, tear out their dumb, bleating throats, leave their stupid bodies in a pile for the worms and crows. He even began to bare his teeth. But the boy knew what was coming, and he was going to scream. He felt his insides collapsing. The worms went in, and the worms were screaming too. Audrey covered her son's ears. He knew what was coming. Archie screamed. He didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear it. No, please, no, no. So he screamed and screamed. And here now, lying against Phantom's grave, he could still hear it, that one sound ending the dog's life, ringing his head, ricocheting off all the memories he had of Fed. It re-echoed over and over, the sound of the shot, and Archie didn't know if there would ever be a time that it wouldn't be a single bullet repeated. It'll be quick. He won't hear the shot. Archie softly patted the stones of Phantom's grave.
Yeah, so finally, do you have a sense of when our listeners might be able to read the full manuscript?
Well, my idea is to record it as an audiobook first. And I suppose possibly it'll be, I'll be able to put it on Audible and start making it available by the end of the year, maybe a bit earlier if things go well.
Thank you very much for joining us at Brainwaves this evening, Paul.
Thank you, Mark.
Do you, if any of our listeners would like to find out more about what you do or learn about your writing, where can they find that?
Well, I have a little, I'm open to people contacting me on Facebook, but if they could just put a writer in their profile that they listen to 3CR or something. So I know it's someone who's generally interested, not some scammer. So it's a bit
understandable. And the work that you do with Mixed Nuts Media, for example, the video project the video project that you were working on as a film reviewer, where will that be available?
I'm not. Well, we've still got quite a bit of editing to do, so that'll be in the second half of the year, I'd say.
And does Mixed Nuts Media, do they have a website?
I think they have a website. I don't know the exact address.
All right, yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too.
Big thank you to Paul Guyton for joining us on Brainwaves this evening. It's always wonderful to hear the positive impact that engaging in creativity can have on our mental health. I'm looking forward to listening to the finished manuscript when Paul is finally able to record it for Audible. We'll be sure to let our listeners know if Paul has any updates for us. Until then, thank you for joining us on Brainwaves this evening. We'll be back next Wednesday for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.